And we're back.
Okay, so
one of the classic places that, one of the groups that I want to talk a little bit about was the Islamic scholars. And, okay, all right. So basically, the Islamic scholars focused a little bit on a different thing. And they're focusing on taking the Christian world, okay, so you're looking at the understanding of the self, Neoplatonism. Basically, the Islamic world is looking at it from a naturalistic aspect that we come out of Aristotle. All right, so we're going back in the Islamic world. Basically, you're going back even before Augustine and all, and the aspects of Neoplatonism. You're going back to Aristotle. All right, and it's looking basically at the combination of Aristotle's psychology and Roman and Islamic medicine. And the classic example of this, it relates to this, is that the Islamic scholars basically changed Neoplatonism into a more physiological context. And as a result of that, it's carrying on the classical medical conditions and medical stuff that Galen and all the others that are floating around out there. And they're looking at a variety of different things, like brain structures, physiology, and assorted other things that were talked about that. And one of the people that really talks about a lot of this is Hasan ibn Sina. And what he was a great Islamic physician, a great thinker of his time, etc. And he contended that the individuals, unlike the Christians, which talked about one soul, ibn Sina talked about persons having multiple souls. And this is the picture that you see in out there. So we have a rational soul that's looking at the intellect of the universe, managing everyday affairs. We have the sensitive soul looking at all sorts of other stuff, memory, sort of other things. And we have a vegetative soul, which is more related to reproduction, growth, nourishment, and on and on and on. So the point is, you don't need to memorize all of these, okay? The point is that it's more than just one particular soul that's out there. And what they're trying to do is he's trying to combine information that we know of from physiology and anatomy from the time that he of his time to an influence and impact also with God as well. Okay, so he's trying to combine both of those things. All right. So combining physiological stuff with stuff from Galen, etc., and of course. Doing assorted other things as well. And of course, the contributions that a lot of the Islamic scholars made were very, very important, okay? Internal senses, ventricles, and ultimately, a lot of the writings of Ibn Sina basically continue on until the 16th century, all right? So, real, some good stuff here, all right? But it's a different contrast to what was going on in Christian philosophy. Okay. Major contributions, took Aristotle's philosophy, put it in a physiological context. All right. So now I can go back out of this set and go. This is not good. So let's try this. Moving back and forth in between stuff here.
So, try the other one.
Try the other one?
Yeah, to the left. Yeah.
This one? Yeah. There we go. Okay. Just right? This is right. Okay, very good. Thank you very much. All right, so. Okay, so we move on then. All right, and now we're moving back into Christian civilization and the philosophers again, and basically starting with St. Bonaventure, okay? And basically here what we're doing is looking at a dualist model, okay? So here's where you start to get the changes. You're starting to get some changes going on. And basically took the soul and the body are two separate systems, soul for the mortal existence of the body, its earthly existence. And ultimately, for St. Bonaventure, the essence of a person was the soul. And it had two different types of knowledge. Knowledge of the external world, okay, could have the knowledge of the out there. So that's all the stuff about the trees and the plants and on and on and on. But you had to learn it. All right. So you had to learn about those concepts. All right. And knowledge of the soul alone. All right. And this. So here, what you're starting to see is you're starting to see the basic underlying tenets of a difference between what is going on in the spiritual world and what is going on in the natural world, all right? We don't really talk about St. Bonaventure as the primary person that makes that distinction, but as you can start to see here, this is where you start, this is some of the basic stuff that starts to get going, all right? So the source of that knowledge, especially for the soul, is again coming through introspection, stuff that we've talked about before. Okay? Aquinas, all right? So Aquinas, kind of going on with looking at Aristotle stuff, the teachings of the church, etc. And basically what Aquinas does is shows that it's not incompatible with Christianity. Remember, the philosophers of this time are trying to work within a Christian context. You just couldn't go out and say, oh, that Christian stuff is all bunk. If you did that, what happened to you? You died, right? Okay? And so you can't do that. And the people at the time really were devout, all right? It wasn't just this kind of pseudo stuff, all right? They believed this stuff, and a lot of people today still believe this stuff. But the point that they were trying to do is trying to reconcile those things that were out there that we learned from Aristotle, the natural observation, those kinds of things, with really what's going on within a Christian framework. Okay? So, basically, what Aristotle is saying is everything, you know, Aristotle staying close to nature, silent on God. Aquinas goes and basically says everything depends on and reveals God. And so what Aquinas does is do one major thing. He makes Aristotle the final authority on everything that relates to logical thinking and natural laws. But he basically also takes this point that faith goes beyond reasoning to get at ultimate truths. So you can, reasoning and logic and all the other kinds of things can only take you so far. You have to move a step beyond and have faith to get at that really ultimate truth. And of course, this is really what begins to break that, shatter that theological metaphysics issue, all right? And so Aquinas really begins. So although Bonaventure talks about it initially to a degree, it's really Aquinas that really makes that break of two major groups. One, logical thinking, natural laws. Two, faith and the spiritual aspects of it. Okay? And so now you have, instead of one kind of intermingled with each other, now you have two camps. Right? And each camp begins to do its own thing until ultimately today we have this major chasm and divide. Okay? So this is really where you start to give the actual birth of science, etc. Okay? So as we move later into the Middle Ages, you start to get the capitalism, you start to get the nation states, but we also get, like we're having today, we have economic problems, all right? And that causes issue, and you begin to have crime and violence, and one big thing begins to happen about 1350 or so, and that is bubonic plague, or what they knew as the Black Death. And it kills a third of the European population. That's a lot of people. Think of that. Let's see, there's 3, 5, 7, 9, there's 12 of us. Let's just say that 4 of you disappeared from this room right now. Okay? Just like that. Boom, you're gone. So, and really cynical, pessimistic, on and on and on. Remember, back in those times, there was no welfare state. There were no food stamps. There were no even if you were on, if you were getting welfare payments, you didn't have your two TVs, right? And your car and the cell phone, right? Which is always interesting. So when you think about poverty, we're talking about, where am I going to get my next meal coming from? And so the information that you hear out of North Korea, that's real, okay? And that's a lot of times the way it was like back in those times. Okay. But in 1453, the Renaissance began. So Constantinople falls, which is really the last major Roman Christian type of city. It finally falls, primarily due to the technology innovation called the cannon. Anyway, and basically, the Greeks scholars, they fled and changed. In Renaissance, you get lots of changes in art, changes in politics, lots of social disruption. Of course, you have wars. Okay, of course, that's a 100 years war, then the 30 years war. So think about a war that's going on 100 years. Okay, that's a long time. Think about a war that's been going on over 1,000 years. That's going on too. And, of course, by 1400, you have the Black Plague and the Bubonic Plague and other things killed lots and lots of people in Europe. You have no idea how lucky you are today with medicine, the way it's transformed your life. Okay? What do you worry about today? Most of you worry about the flu, maybe getting the flu. And today, the two major places it's going to kill a lot of people, it's going to be influenza and tuberculosis. It's going to kill lots of people here pretty soon, I think. And you have a medicine community that really helps with that. Back then, they didn't have that. Okay, they didn't understand vectors and all the other kinds of things that cause lots of the problems that we have in medicine. Okay, so 1453. Lots of diseases year after year. You have lots of different things. And, of course, the classical scapegoats are thought of. And, of course, back then, it was the witches and the Jews. All right. And, of course, you have lots of problems everywhere. It's not a good time. Okay. It's amazing that people survive. All right. And it only reflects, for me, the adaptability of the human species. It's amazing. Where we live and adapt. Okay, science. There wasn't any room for science back then. Okay, and basically, you begin to get the idea of humanism. And humanism, we start to become more human-centered, less God-centered. God's not helping us. We've had all these problems. We don't worry about God anymore. We're worried just about survival. Okay. All right. Now, philosophers in the Renaissance era. Filelfo, okay, number one, girls and as well as boys can learn the classics. Okay, so we can start to train girls. Back before then, we didn't train girls about anything. We were a homemaker, you raised the kids, went out and got some food, on and on and on. Guys did everything else, right? Guys were the thinkers. Not true today, not true for Filelfo and others. Okay, Strum is what you guys need to be doing now, okay? Major emphasis on formal lessons of learning. Drill, practice. Learn it, do it over again, and on and on and on. Have tests to measure achievement, immediate correction of errors, classify students on the basis of age and academic progress. A lot of the things that you do today, all right? Okay, so the big thing was drill, practice, all right? You learned stuff, and you learned it, you memorized it, you regurgitated it. You did not forget it, okay? So, lots of different things. The exams that you took in the old days back then would freak all of us out, okay? It wasn't just a test of what you know now. It was a test of comprehensive knowledge. So, right now, I make you learn a section of this material. Then I make you learn a second section of the material. What I should do, but you wouldn't like, is you are responsible for not only the second section, but the first section. Do you want to do that? No. Yeah, no, you don't want to do that. Okay? And then, of course, you had a comprehensive final. All right? So that's what you do in today when you go for your PhD, when you're doing comprehensive exams. And basically what you have is four major areas. You have to know everything in that area. We can ask you anything. Anything in that area. And you have to know it. And know it well. So what does that mean for you? It means that you work really, really, really hard. So you're looking at a 10, 12, 15 hour day of studying and writing and on and on and on. And you're doing that for 6 to 8 months. Every day. And you take your tests and hopefully you pass. Phil Mohan talks about when he was having to take his tests. He was a former faculty member here, and he was talking about not only did you have to take the tests, you could be asked the tests in a foreign language. Okay? And also for your dissertation, the same way. And so he walked in, and for his dissertation, he had to know French. And so what he had to do, you see, his first half an hour of his presentation was in French for the professor that was sitting in the room who was French and was on this committee. And that's what he did. They talked for half an hour in French to make sure that that professor knew that he understood French well enough to communicate in it. Did you do that today?
Nah.
Okay. It was a different time, different zeitgeist, okay? But that's what it was, okay? Different types of models, okay? So, Loyola founds the Jesuits, basically rigid disciplinary teaching, memorization skills, and on and on and on. Basically formalized studies of the languages, okay? And the classics, and literature, and rhetoric, and science, on and on and on. And this is when you really look at a lot of the stuff that we talk about in the academy today, this is where it comes from, okay? These people, right? To really make you, in the old days here, even up until recently, probably the last 30 years, in the old days, college was designed to make you a well-rounded person. That's why we call it the liberal arts, all right? The liberal arts, math, science, English, writing, those kinds of things. Everybody had that at a basic level, and you did all of it well, plus your discipline on top of that. And the idea was is that when you came out of college, you are a much better person. You're a more rounded individual. Today, college is a lot more focused on the technical aspects. You're in here. The reason you're in college today is not because you want to learn about how to think and all the philosophy and all the other stuff, right? You're not here for that. What are you here for? You want to get a job when you get out of here, right? That's really what it comes about, right? You want to get technology, you want to develop some skills so you can go out and get a good job. It's not just a job either, right? It's about a job that makes you lots of money. So you can have your house, 2 1/4 kids and a dog and a couple cars, right?
2 1/4
kids. And what?
Yeah. Just
2 1/4 kids and a dog, yeah. Okay. And, you know, and all those other kinds of things. That's what college today is about. It's a different time. And but ultimately, when you look at Strom and Loyola and you put all that together, you basically develop a person who has a very strong knowledge about a lot of things, to reason and to question and all the kinds of things that the academy was to reason. Mulcaster, another same kind of thing, okay? Looked at the humanistic stuff. They were a little bit different from the Jesuits. Adapt the instruction to the pupils, mental abilities of the pupils. Advocate universal education for girls and boys. And basically advocated, here's the thing, the study of specialized subjects be restricted only to pupils adequately prepared to take them. Not every one of you is going to be a computer scientist. Not every one of you is going to be a doc. Not every one of you is going to be a clinical psychologist that wants to be one. Okay, you have to have certain levels of skill sets in order to do that and have specialized knowledge, etc. So You know, for example, I don't claim to be a computer scientist. Don't even claim to be at all. I have a tough enough time moving around in my cell phone. Okay. Programming, we all programmed a long time ago. We all programmed a bit, all right, in one form or another, because you had to. Today, programs are way beyond everything I could ever think of, all right? And I don't even do it anymore. Okay, I don't even think about it anymore, because somebody has already done it for me. So a lot of the stuff that we do in PowerPoint today, with a lot of stuff we do in web design and on and on and on, I've got a program that does that for me. All the code's in there. I just put in what I want. And of course, it takes, for the computer people that are out there, of course, I eat up lots of bandwidth when I'm in there messing around with my stuff. And it just makes the code look like hell. Okay? And for people who are good coders, the fewer lines of code that you have, the better off it is. Okay? And that's cool. And those people that can do that well, God bless them. Boy, they've made our lives a lot easier. Especially for you people with the iPhones and all that other stuff, you better have all that stuff in here or it doesn't work. Technology can only go so far, you have to have the software to go with it. Okay, so that's initially some of the early philosophers that are out there. Okay, so we're going to continue on and talk about the next section next time. So have yourself a good day and we'll look forward to talking with you soon.